95.7 The Fan presents The Drive with Sterner and Hughley. It's the 5 o'clock fire.
That ball's into right center field. If it gets to the wall, the Astros will take to the lead. It does get to the wall. Pena's going to score. Yordan is going to think about three. The big guy going for a triple. He's in there. And the dugout explodes. 7-6 Astros.
I think he timed it with triples this year. Like, that's unacceptable. Nah, but, you know, Yordan feels like he comes through every single time. Nothing surprises me with that guy anymore.
There it is. A big win last night for the Astros. And those two guys, Yordan Alvarez, and then the voice you heard there, Jeremy Pena, they were right in the middle of it. And they needed it. They needed every bit of it. Yiner Diaz chipping in with a big performance, probably the best game he has had all season. And it puts them in first place, Clint. They are in first place now. The Rangers lost to the White Sox last night, so they came into the game in second place and out of the postseason, walking into the game, and now they are back in first place in the West with a big performance. And Clint, they're going to need more of that again tonight. And Peter Lambert gets the ball. And he's one to watch, Clint, because Peter Lambert, I would say, if you look at the full season, has been their best, most reliable starting pitcher, right? Obviously, the injuries to Hunter Brown, and Hunter Brown obviously not being the Hunter Brown that he was, especially last year. But they need to get Peter Lambert kind of back going again. Lambert has five innings his last two matches, outings. And it's looked like he is really labored to get to his five innings and has struggled big time. Don't know if he's starting to reach a wall. He's a veteran, so don't know if that is a big deal there, or teams are starting to get used to what he's doing out there. But he has not been the same guy that he was. They desperately need him to get back on track to being the guy that was at times. You got to a point where you could depend on Peter Lambert. You could depend on Peter Lambert to come out there and give you a solid outing and give you a chance. And he has struggled a little bit here of late, and they need him in the worst way. Like, I don't think they can sustain like what the Petco kid did last night, giving you four innings and five runs. They're going to need somebody to come in and give them a pitching performance where they don't have to score nine runs and multiple home runs.
Yeah, look, needing 8-plus to win a game is not going to be ideal for this Astros team for damn sure. So, I don't know. I look at it with Pete Lambert. I've thought this is one of the more fascinating things to follow as the Astros season unfolds. You know, 3 2/3 against the Angels in that game where they lost 18-3 on August the 20th, I believe, is his last outing. 9 earned runs. Now, to be fair, that's the only game that he's given up more than, I think he gave up 5 earned runs once. He gave up 4 earned runs twice. Everything else has been 3 or fewer. So, we're talking about 3 or 4 starts where he may or may not have struggled a bit, the last of which was the worst, 3 2/3, 9 earned. The thought of, hey, man, because, you know, a lot of these advanced stats guys will tell you that Lambert's getting lucky. Down the stretch here, he's getting lucky. It's liable to unfold. The wheels are going to come off at some point. I'm not letting that one game of 9 earned runs ruin it for me. I just don't see it. I hope the kid holds it together, obviously, because I'm an Astros fan. But I'm pulling for him to complete the season in impressive fashion.
Lineup behind him, the Astros, they bring in Pena and Alvarez, 1-2 at the top at short DH. Hopefully they can continue to stay hot. Paredes got on base multiple times yesterday. Altuve had multiple hits. Marcio had multiple hits yesterday. Christian Walker did not. Taylor Trammell is in the lineup. Cam Smith had a big triple yesterday. And then Christian Vasquez is catching. No Yiner Diaz after 2 home runs, multiple RBIs, total bases. He is not in the lineup tonight, which is interesting. to say the least. I see Joel right here on Twitch talking about you can't trust Diaz. Well, I don't know who the hell else you could trust up there either.
Yeah.
At the back end of that, yeah, that lineup.
That's a hell of an approach to take with this lineup, is that you can't trust somebody. I mean, I do disagree, but I don't necessarily give that much of a rip. But the thought is, well, I mean, the way you could manipulate this lineup, I mean, we're talking about choosing guys like Tramiel over –
They got about seven guys that have the same level of trust.
Yeah, fair. Good call.
and when you hit two home runs and drive in multiple runs with three hits in a game, yeah, I think you get to play the next day. I find a way to get you in the lineup the next day. So big time. They have fared well against teams with 500 or above records, and we can see if they can continue. They're 24-13. In those games. We'll see if they can continue that tonight as they need to keep racking up all these wins. Can they get above 500 again? They can with a win tonight.
Peter is kind of being that guy for us.
5 o'clock fire.
Yeah, he has. All right, joint practice, a couple of things to get into. Overall, if you're trying to get an understanding of how joint practice went today, generally we'll let you hear from D'Amico. But I don't think that is the play here. Yeah, you know, the coach of the team may soft-shoe some things at times. It may make you feel a little bit better than it was. If you get the other coach expressing honesty about them getting their asses kicked in their own joint practice, that says a lot. Here's Dave Canales, the head coach of the Panthers, in his description of what happened, especially to his offense at this joint practice between the Panthers and Texans.
It was pretty lopsided today, I'll be honest. I would say that in general, over camp, I'm very excited about where we're at as an offense in our scheme, the variation of the run game, the actions tied into that, the drop back pass game, Bryce's rhythm with a lot of our guys, with T-Mac. You know, Xavier hasn't been out there, but with Jalen, just finding different ways to get completions. And also, I've been really encouraged by that. Today did not show that. Today there was a couple of flashes of some nice throws and catches, but, you know, that was a good group today. So, again, I try not to just take it all in a microcosm, but if we want to be good, we have to be able to play against teams like this.
Today did not show that. I mean, I appreciate the coach going back and really dipping into the previous 2 weeks of training camp to give his fan base and his team a little bit of confidence. But it sounds like they got absolutely that tidal wave that old Foster Moreau keeps talking about this defense will turn into if you ain't ready. It sounds like one of them old tsunamis hit Charlotte.
Yeah.
In the form of the Texans defense. So.
Yeah, he said anytime we drop back to pass, we just couldn't do anything.
Yeah.
He said Will Anderson, Danielle Hunter, Aaron Wilson reported Danielle Hunter had 4 to 5 sacks himself.
Yeah.
Today, and. Bullock had multiple interceptions today. We've seen videos of one of them,
yeah,
which was clearly affected by the pass rush.
Well, this is. I mean, yes, the Texans' defense is really, really good, and they're going to be really good against anything the NFL can throw at them. The fun, when it gets real fun to watch as a Texans fan is when you run up against a team that has no business being on the field with the Texans from a talent standpoint and from an intensity standpoint. They are just going to absolutely destroy those offenses. Look, we've seen it before, but I think this year it's got a chance to be even worse.
Yeah,
I mean, the likes of the Carolina Panthers, I mean, they will destroy them for four quarters.
Yeah. Also today, we got to hear from D'Amico talking about their new addition, Kayshon Boutte, for the first time. Here's D'Amico's thought process in bringing in the new wide receiver.
Yeah, adding Kayshon was a big get for us. We know we lost a significant player for us in Jaden Higgins, and it's hard to replace him. When you try to go out and find a guy with the caliber of Kayshon, we've played against Kayshon multiple times over the past couple years. He's continued to make plays time and time again. He showed up. He's a young player, still an ascending player with a lot to improve upon, a lot to grow. So I'm excited to work with a young player who still has a very bright and promising future, that he has that big play making ability already. So it's been great to have him so far. We'll get him up and rolling here as the week continues.
There it is. D'Amico Ryan's talking about his new addition, Kayshon Boutte. And it looks like the big play ability and personally being able to have to play against them multiple times seemed to also be a big help in bringing him in here because they knew what they were looking at and the issues they had with him.
I like the part where he says still an ascending player. Yeah. We talked about it a little bit with B. Scott when the block was hot a little bit earlier. But I've thought this since he was at LSU, and I know there were some distractions off the field. I've thought it since he was in New England. He's a good receiver, good complimentary piece, good number two, and puts up some good numbers. I've always thought that there was, D'Amico says, still an ascending player. I always thought there was another level to him. I may be wrong, but I'm hopeful that D'Amico Ryans and Nick Caley and this bunch can bring out in Kayshon Boutte what obviously New England was not able to do. Because I just see a next level, like a higher level receiver than just that complimentary piece that gives you 500 to 600 yards and
it's certainly there.
Yeah, it's something there. I just always thought there.
And I think they believe it. They clearly believe it too.
Let's get it on, baby.
5 o'clock fire.
So that was the good of the joint practice. The bad and concerning was the injury front has hit the Texans again. And it's kind of hit him. Dylan Horton, a reserve rotation defensive end, tore his Achilles. Obviously, we know the ACL injury that has Higgins out for the year. Woodaz broke his finger. He is depth there as well. And we, maybe not for the year, but Jadeveon Clowney and Dominique Robinson, those guys have not been able to practice. Obviously, the Tank Dell situation, Brevin Jordan, they've had some guys. It looks like two more today. Braden Smith and Allie Gay both had lower leg injuries. Hell, Clint, they shared the cart. It happened so close together. They shared the cart in what happened. And it looks like with Braden Smith, it's a foot issue that he is being evaluated for. And Gay, it is a knee issue that he is going to have an MRI on. Here is D'Amico giving you the latest when he spoke to the media about those two injuries.
Smith and Gay went down today in the practice, and we'll evaluate them when we get inside.
Say what the injuries were?
We do not know.
Okay, at this point, as we said, we know it's a foot with Braden Smith and a knee with Allie Gay. And Clint, it looks like that's the big thing is the depth is starting to be looked at and challenged. And Braden Smith looks like he was going to be outside of the top five. But we all know that the probability of him playing with a normal offensive line is high, let alone Trent Brown.
Well, even if he wasn't going to be relied upon as a depth piece and they chose to move him a lot like they did Cam Robinson last year, you need him healthy to do so. So any way you slice it with Braden Smith, that's the big one here that whether you were going to keep him as depth and quality depth or, hell, maybe if you thought one day he'd be a starter – or you were going to move him outright. I mean, either way it goes, that's the one that's a little bit of a ding here. Can they get him back to where he can play, or is this some longer term injury? You know, we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, and then Allie Gay, that hurts when you got two guys that are out, and then you had Dylan Horton, who just tore him.
5 o'clock fire.
All right, one last thing, Clint.
Sorry, Shell.
You're good. I know you're over Dylan Horton too. I mean, what?
My bad.
I mean, more Allie Gay. I'm probably not Allie Gay. Anyway, the Pro Bowl, it's done. It's been eliminated. At least the game has been, thank God. The NFL has eliminated, according to Adam Schefter, the Pro Bowl games per league officials. The focus now will be shifted to celebrating the honor of being a Pro Bowl selection. So
the game is over.
They said, hey, man, what are we doing here, man? We've shifted this thing to flag, and now we got guys that have seven touchdown passes and 10 interceptions making the Pro Bowl. We got to shut this thing down. I'm glad for this.
Shadour played in it.
Yeah, that's what he had. Seven.
Oh, was he? Yeah.
He seven touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Like at some point, man, like they needed to do this. The players didn't want to play in the game. Now, they seemed like they enjoyed being at the Super Bowl last year, but they didn't want to play in the game. They can go on vacation. And now when you make the Pro Bowl, you really make it. Like, it's going to be the top three, whatever it is, at a position and not getting all the way down to well, 7 or 8.
Look, well done. You want to give the guy, the fellas that make it an all expense paid trip somewhere and have a big celebratory evening with them. That'd be great. Take their families. Cool. This is a smart thing to do. It's common sense, right? Preseason's next.